agreed to talk about some very concrete experiences from the field when implementing strategies to reduce maternal mortality. And I'll be very specific that the strategy that we were most involved with was sort of at the end of that continuum of place, emphasizing care for women who do have emergencies. I'm going to review some data. First, I'm going to introduce a list of life-saving procedures and then review some data on the availability of these procedures and then talk about what we've observed during the programming, trying to increase access and availability of these services. The take-home message is that inputs are necessary but not always sufficient to solving what are ultimately systemic problems of the health system. The principal causes of maternal mortality are very well known. As Khan and colleagues at WHO have shown, the distribution of these causes shifts from region to region, but the causes basically remain the same. As Anne says, the technical knowledge of how to treat many of these complications is also well known. There are essential drugs, key procedures, blood transfusions, and surgery. And there's a short list of interventions and drugs that we've used quite a lot for monitoring purposes. And these signal functions have been used to sort of measure the capacity of a facility to provide emergency care to mothers during pregnancy and childbirth and to their newborns. The first seven functions define a basic emergency obstetric care facility, which is commonly a health center. It might be a hospital without the surgery and the blood transfusions. It's important to point out that for a facility to be considered fully functioning at a particular level, they've provided all of those services, all seven, in the case for basic, within the last 3 months of the assessment. However, I'm going to focus more sort of on the dynamics of this mid-level or potentially basic facility, since it is this level that I believe could play an even more important role in reducing maternal and newborn mortality than it currently does. After seeing the results of more than 50 needs assessments in emergency obstetric care from all regions of the world, we know that the two most frequently performed functions are parenteral antibiotics and oxytocin. Since the administration of oxytocin is involved in the removal of manual removal of placenta, my focus will be on the other four basic functions, and we'll talk about the other four in this order. The evidence from randomized controlled trials shows that the drug of choice for severe preeclampsia and eclampsia is magnesium sulfate. Although some of this evidence is more than 10 years old, the systematic reviews and the Cochrane statements have come out in the last 5 years. Magnesium sulfate in its dry form is Epsom salts, and diazepam or Valium is a tranquilizer that has often been used to give to women with severe preeclampsia, but it is known to cause neonatal respiratory depression, hypotonia, and hypothermia, and generally it is less effective in treating eclampsia. So if magnesium sulfate is the drug of choice, how likely are we to find it? This slide compares the availability of mag sulfate with diazepam across a number of countries. Both drugs are found in most of the facilities in the Latin American countries on the left. Honduras, I don't know. We don't have a column for diazepam. I suspect it's similar to the mag sulfate bar, but they didn't report on it in their report. Mag sulfate is much less frequently found in the facilities in the African countries, and it wasn't found in a single facility of the 79 that were interviewed in Rajasthan, India. Of course, this was in 2000 that survey took place, but there was none at that time. So the next question is, if mag sulfate is the preferred drug for treating these complications, Is it available at health centers and at hospitals? You see, it's equally and widely available in the two sites in Latin America, but you're much more likely to find MAG sulfate in hospitals in the three African countries. And MAG sulfate is exclusively used at the hospital level in Nepal. These data come from different EMOC needs assessments, and we are grateful to our partners UNFPA and UNICEF and the host countries for sharing the data with us. The next few slides with graphs, most of those data come from the service provision assessments, which are in the public domain. Removal of retained products conception can be done with either manual vacuum aspiration or dilatation and curettage. However, there is increasing evidence that non-surgical methods of uterine evacuation, for example, the use of misoprostol, is also effective. Evidence shows that between the two surgical methods, MVA is the preferred procedure because of less blood loss, a lower risk of uterine perforation, less pain for the women, it's quicker, and together these factors make MVA more likely to be an outpatient procedure and therefore is less costly. This slide shows the selection of African countries and the availability of the two types of equipment, and you can see that there are a lot of facilities out there that have neither kind of equipment. Kenya, you have a little more MVA. Ghana, you certainly have more MVA than DNC, but in Rwanda, Tanzania, and Egypt, you're more likely to find DNC equipment in the facilities than you are MVA. And this is the availability of MVA by facility level. You're more likely to find the equipment in hospitals than in health centers. Kenya is the exception, where about 40% of the health centers and 40% of the hospitals had MVA. And Nepal seems to be doing very well in stocking MVA equipment, both at the health center and the hospital level. Assisted vaginal delivery is the use of instruments to help deliver a baby when labor fails to progress, and it should be used only if a woman and the baby meet certain conditions. There is little controversy that it's much easier to teach vacuum extraction than it is to teach forceps. But generally, and I think because of that, the fact that it's easier to teach, vacuum extraction is probably spreading much more rapidly than forceps. Though I wouldn't go so far as to say that even vacuum extraction is spreading. If anything, it's probably disappearing. But generally, the choice of instrument is determined by the clinician's skills and preference. And in these African countries, as few as 5% of the facilities in Tanzania had a vacuum extractor. The report did not mention forceps. Either there's negligible use of forceps or they just chose not to report on it. In Kenya, Kenya and Egypt seem to use both instruments, or at least they have both instruments available. And at the health facility level, we see certainly much more likelihood of finding vacuum extractors at the hospital level than at the health centers. Again, Nepal has a fairly large, almost 60% of their health centers were stocked with vacuum extractors. And the final signal function, neonatal resuscitation, is done with an AMBU bag and mask, and it's used for newborns who initially have difficulty breathing on their own. AMBU bags are consistently more available than the other pieces of equipment and drugs that we've looked at. Again, but like the other functions, it's more likely to be found in hospitals than in health centers. So from these slides, you can see that essential drugs and equipment are often not available, especially the treatment of choice at the health center level. When programming for emergency obstetric care, determining which drugs and equipment are missing is the first step. Procurement and distribution must follow, as well as setting up sustainable and reliable supply and maintenance systems. Training clinicians to use the drugs and equipment must take place in conjunction with the arrival of equipment, and it's amazingly difficult to synchronize the arrival of equipment and recent training. And finally, training should take place in the context of updated guidelines for how and when to use the drugs and interventions. Now, putting magnesium sulfate into practice can be complex. To begin with, we find that magnesium sulfate is not on the essential drug list of many countries. In 2002, only 45 countries had mag sulfate on their national essential drug list. I know that there are more countries now. This was 2002, but I don't have an updated number. Also, because mag sulfate is so cheap to produce and manufacture, and it's used relatively rarely, the pharmaceutical companies are not very motivated to manufacture, to sell it, to register it in country. And the issues of at what level and by whom the drug is administered are highly linked, but they can be addressed with policy changes in the training. The lack of self-confidence and the adoption of new practices, ceasing to use diazepam, beginning to use mag sulfate, these can be remedied also with training and a lot of good supervision. Mainstreaming MVA can be hampered by the politics of abortion in many countries, and this certainly can affect the availability. And decisions about at what level and by whom MVA should be provided can affect its availability. But certainly, there's been a lot of good progress on this score. There are numerous studies that have shown that mid-level providers at mid-level facilities can safely provide MVA services. It's been my experience that pain management with MVA is often missing. But I think the biggest challenge seems to be the provider's reluctance to switch to MVA. And this slide shows how one health center on the far left, Kaya, made the transition rather quickly. And in a meeting when they were sharing these data, the folks at the hospital Marumeo on the far right asked, well, why were you so successful in Kaya? And I think it turned out to be that there was very good clinical supportive supervision, and the director of the clinic was personally involved. However, I have also heard very draconian threats of throwing out the curettes for DNC in order to force clinicians to adopt MVA. Assisted vaginal delivery is the signal function least likely of the seven to have been performed. The debate over its use in health centers where there is no operating theater is heated. Likewise, who should be trained, if training is even available. Some medical schools in Latin America have ceased teaching the use of these instruments altogether. And because vacuum extraction is fairly easy to teach, it can lead to misuse and complications. These complications usually result from not observing the management protocol or the conditions of application. So what's needed is very strict adherence to the protocols and clinical indications. Assisted vaginal delivery or instrumental delivery is good obstetric medicine, and I think to totally abandon its use and require higher rates of cesarean deliveries is quite troublesome. The issues that surround neonatal resuscitation seem to be less controversial than the other signal functions. One-day trainings are effective, and a range of mid-level providers are known to apply newborn resuscitation, making it possible to perform the service at lower levels of the health system. So in summary, ensuring the availability of essential drugs and equipment may mean a quick win or an easy fix if the health system and the individual facilities are functioning. But more often than not, the lack of availability is an indicator that facility systems or the larger health system itself has problems. Furthermore, the availability of drugs and equipment does not mean that they are used appropriately or that they're used at all. sure some of you have seen unused vacuum extractors sitting on shelves. We also know that there are systemic gaps between the evidence of effectiveness and what is actually practiced, and I think mag sulfate is a good example. At the facility level, we need champions, individuals who can make sure that everything that is needed is in place, such as trained personnel and the allocation of physical space. We need individuals who can push efforts along, who can problem solve and provide support to those individuals who are integrating a new service or a change in practice. These champions need to be supported all the way up the health system, from the district level up to the Ministry's health. And finally, professional societies, international organizations such as FIGO, ICM, WHO, also play a critical role in communicating and advocating updated standards and guidelines. Collecting data such as these from service provision assessments provides governments with updates as to how they're doing. They've been extremely helpful in identifying unexpected problems. Governments have been very surprised to learn how poorly their facilities are actually functioning as opposed to theoretical functioning. These assessments have been helpful developing roadmaps for reducing maternal and newborn mortality and advocacy for policy, program, and budgeting. Thank you.
Thanks, Patsy. That was a terrific overview of some of these specific interventions that we know can actually help save lives. I was somewhat astonished, actually, at the Women Deliver Conference on the second day to hear some people continuing to say, we just don't know what to do, we just don't know what really will save women's lives, and even if I had $1 billion, I wouldn't know how to spend it to save a woman's life. And I think that in the face of that, we've got this evidence and we've got some of these programs, but it is sometimes in the implementation where we have some problems. So our next speaker is Dr. Maxie Raymondville, who is the Director of Women's Health for Zami La Santé, our Partners in Health sister organization down in Haiti in the Central Plateau. And Patsy mentioned the need for champions for women's health, and Maxie is nothing but. He has been involved in our work in Haiti for the past 15 years. He himself is an OBGYN, and he's also a key advisor in the Central Plateau to the ministerial level folks on women's health related issues, and he guides all of our health programs as well in Haiti, as well as providing some advice to our other sites around the world. So with that, I will bring up Dr. Maxie Raymondville from our project in Haiti, and we're going to use Haiti as a very specific case example of how to implement some of these structural solutions.